Robin Olds wasn't just a fighter pilot. He was the embodiment of what every fighter pilot aspired to be. His memoir, Fighter Pilot, has become required reading for military aviators worldwide, with Tom Cruise reportedly keeping a dog-eared copy during the filming of Top Gun Maverick. The son of a pioneering Air Corps officer, Olds transformed himself from a West Point football star into America's most celebrated fighter ace across two wars. His handlebar mustache became as legendary as his combat record, a deliberate act of rebellion that symbolized his lifelong willingness to challenge authority in pursuit of victory. Through his unfiltered account of aerial combat, leadership challenges, and personal struggles, Olds offers us a rare glimpse into the mind of a warrior who lived by a simple creed. A fighter pilot is not just what you do, but who you are. Robin Olds' earliest memories were shaped by the sounds of military life, clanging halyards on flagpoles and Liberty engines warming before dawn at Langley Field. Born in 1922 to Army Air Corps Captain Robert Olds and Eloise Wichman Olds, young Robin lost his mother at age 4. His father, a tough disciplinarian and visionary air power advocate, surrounded Robin with legendary pilots from the Great War, Hap Arnold, Tui Spots, and Ira Eaker, who gathered in their home discussing how airplanes could carry war directly to the enemy's industrial heart. "By age 5, I could identify airplanes by engine sound alone," Olds recalled. His father would sit with him on their front steps at Langley Field, making him close his eyes to name passing aircraft, an early education that would serve him well. When Hitler invaded Poland in 1939, the 17-year-old Robin tried joining the RAF, but his father stopped him. Instead, he attended West Point, where he excelled at football under Coach Red Blake while preparing for war. After Pearl Harbor accelerated their graduation, Olds went to flight training in Tulsa under instructor John Castora, who became a father figure after his own father's death in April 1943. "I never once went up in the air without learning something new," his father had told him shortly before dying, words that would guide Robin's approach to flying throughout his career. His first solo flight brought total exuberance, surrender, and mastery all at once, a feeling that would sustain him through the darkest moments of war. Despite his instructor, Military Bill, trying to redirect him to bombers out of personal dislike, Olds maneuvered his way into fighter training, even brazenly flying under every bridge on the Hudson from Albany to New York City with another instructor who recognized his natural talent. On June 1, 1943, he received his wings from General Hap Arnold, dedicating them to his father's memory as he stepped off the fields of West Point and into the wild blue yonder. Assigned to the 479th Fighter Group flying P-38 Lightnings, Olds arrived in England just before D-Day. His first combat missions proved frustrating, as strict radio discipline prevented attacking tempting targets. Finally breaking formation to strafe a train, he soon had the entire squadron joining in, earning a reprimand from his squadron commander that foreshadowed his career-long tension with authority. June 6, 1944, D-Day, provided Olds with a ringside seat to history as he flew top cover for the landing forces. Below him spread the vast panoply of war, naval gunfire flashing as cruisers shelled the bluffs, landing craft crowded with men, columns of smoke marking burning ships. He watched men wade ashore through gunfire, some sinking under their gear's weight, blood staining the water around floating bodies. "We had ringside seats to history, but experienced it as a silent film, our engines drowning out all external sound," he wrote. For 2 weeks following D-Day, each pilot flew 10-12 missions over the beachhead. Despite the lack of aerial combat, Olds felt deeply connected to the ground troops fighting through hedgerows and fields. The 479th soon shifted to interdiction missions, bombing bridges, rail yards, and supply dumps across northern France. Combat transformed these young men, developing what Olds called a profound appreciation for life known only to combat veterans. He observed that laughter became as profound as sadness, friendships deepened, and every moment felt exactly right, with time's edges tinged by light. His first aerial victory came on August 14, 1944, during a pre-dawn mission to bomb a bridge at Chalon-sur-Saône. After successfully bombing his target, he spotted two enemy aircraft and pursued them, confirming they were FW-190s before opening fire. His first burst hit the wingman, who crashed in a huge explosion. The lead aircraft broke hard left, but Old stayed inside his turn and fired again, scoring his first two kills. By August 25, Olds participated in his first fighter sweep ahead of the bomber force. When he spotted 45 to 50 ME-109s, he attacked despite losing two flight members to engine trouble. During this intense battle, both his engines quit when he forgot to switch tanks after dropping externals. After restarting them and downing another 109, he entered compressibility, the dreaded condition few survived, during a dive to help a P-51. His controls failed as he plummeted, but he recovered just 20 feet above a plowed field. Finding an ME-109 on his tail, he executed a desperate maneuver, reversed, and shot down his pursuer. Landing at Wadisham, his crew chief informed him he was the 479th's first ace. The arrival of Colonel Hubert Hub Zemka as the 479th's new commander in mid-1944 proved transformative for Robin Olds. Zemka, a legendary triple ace who had mentored famous pilots like Francis Gabreski and Gerald Johnson with the 56th Fighter Group, brought not only extensive combat experience, but revolutionary tactical innovations. His signature fan-out formation tactics, which allowed fighter squadrons to provide better bomber coverage while maintaining offensive capability, had already proven devastatingly effective against the Luftwaffe over Europe. Though we were eager but inexperienced, Zemka quickly set us straight, teaching, leading, and putting us on the right track, Olds wrote in his memoirs. Despite Zemka's stern, no-nonsense demeanor and reputation for demanding excellence, the young pilot sensed his genuine concern for their welfare and development. He spent countless hours personally coaching them on combat tactics, aircraft handling, and the psychological aspects of aerial warfare. Olds absorbed crucial leadership lessons that would define his command philosophy throughout his 30-year military career. Know the mission inside and out. Connect personally with your people, from mechanics to pilots. Make daily visits to all shops and sections to maintain visibility and understanding. Ask probing questions about operations and maintenance. Learn precisely what supplies are lacking and why. Regularly verify that officers intimately know their people's needs and challenges. Most importantly, never bullshit the troops, but make absolutely clear that ultimate responsibility stops with you as commander. By October 1944, the squadron completed its conversion from P-38 Lightnings to P-51 Mustangs, a transition that significantly enhanced their combat capabilities. During one particularly harrowing mission escorting B-17s to Germany, Olds witnessed waves of Luftwaffe fighters savagely attacking the bomber formation in what he described as organized chaos. The horrific scene of falling aircraft debris, bodies, and parachutes would haunt him for years. One image particularly burned into his memory: a B-17 tail gunner hopelessly entangled in his parachute lines, making brief but unforgettable eye contact as he fell past Old's cockpit, a moment that crystallized the brutal reality of aerial warfare. After completing his combat tour with 16 confirmed aerial victories, making him a double ace at just 22 years old, Old's returned to America. There, he found himself suddenly an outsider among civilians who couldn't begin to comprehend what he'd experienced in the skies over Europe. Even at West Point, his beloved alma mater, he felt profoundly disconnected from the cadets he saw running around with tucked chins and squared corners. The military academy that had once shaped him now seemed oppressively dull compared to the electric atmosphere of wartime Britain, where every day had carried the weight of life or death decisions and the camaraderie of combat pilots. After completing his combat tour with 16 confirmed aerial victories, making him a double ace at just 22 years old, Olds returned to America. There, he found himself suddenly an outsider among civilians who couldn't begin to comprehend what he'd experienced in the skies over Europe. Even at West Point, his beloved alma mater, he felt profoundly disconnected from the cadets he saw running around with tucked chins and squared corners. The military academy that had once shaped him now seemed oppressively dull compared to the electric atmosphere of wartime Britain, where every day had carried the weight of life or death decisions and the camaraderie of combat pilots. The post-war years brought new challenges as Olds transitioned to jets, flying the P-80 Shooting Star at Marchfield under the command of Colonel Tex Hill, the legendary Flying Tigers ace. Despite initial hostility from established pilots who viewed him as an upstart World War II hotshot, Olds quickly mastered the jet, which he described as absolutely beautiful, polished aluminum, smooth lines, with impressive performance and handling characteristics. The P-80's top speed of 558 miles an hour and service ceiling of 45,000 feet represented a quantum leap from the propeller-driven P-51 Mustang he had flown in combat. In 1946, Olds met and married Hollywood actress Ella Raines after an impromptu visit to her home, arranged through mutual friends in the film industry. Their whirlwind romance captured media attention, with their wedding making headlines in both aviation and entertainment circles. Their relationship flourished despite his demanding career, with Olds becoming friends with celebrities like John Wayne, David Niven, and director John Ford. He once even buzzed her Western movie set in his P-80, accidentally causing 24 horses and mules to flee into the desert, halting production for 2 days and earning him a stern reprimand from his commanding officer. Tragedy struck when Olds' close friend and mentor, Pappy Herbst, crashed during an air show at Del Mar Racetrack. They had been performing the first-ever jet aerobatic demonstration, thrilling crowds with precision formation flying and solo maneuvers never before seen with jet aircraft. When Pappy inexplicably decided to repeat their finale, a dangerous split S maneuver, Olds knew something was wrong. He barely managed to pull through at 50 feet, skimming a riverbed, but looked back to see Pappy crash nose-low into the bank. Devastated, he had to inform Pappy's new bride of just 24 hours, a responsibility that would haunt him for years. In 1948, Olds joined the RAF as an exchange officer at Tangmere, flying Meteor jets during a crucial period of Cold War tensions. His introduction to British flying was terrifying. After a cursory cockpit check, his squadron leader handed him a leather helmet and said, "Now then, old boy, off you go." With no ground training or written exam, Olds somehow managed to take off into murky English weather, fly a careful pattern along the coast, and miraculously find the runway again for landing. This experience began his lifelong appreciation for British aviation culture and formed lasting friendships with RAF pilots. The following years saw Olds commanding fighter squadrons in Germany and Libya, where he helped establish NATO's air defense network against potential Soviet aggression. His marriage to Ella grew increasingly strained as their careers pulled them in different directions, she continuing her Hollywood career while he deployed to remote bases. When their son Robert Ernest was stillborn in Libya, Olds mourned by releasing his ashes into the Mediterranean during a solitary dive in his aircraft, a deeply personal moment that reflected both his grief and his connection to aviation. This period marked a turning point in both his personal life and military career, as the Cold War's demands increasingly shaped his trajectory as a fighter pilot and commander. By 1966, Olds was frustrated with his Pentagon assignment and the Vietnam War's restrictive rules of engagement. When offered command of the 8th Tactical Fighter Wing at Ubon Royal Thai Air Force Base, he seized the opportunity to return to combat, arranging a compressed 5-day checkout in the F-4 Phantom with his friend Chappie James. Arriving at Ubon, he found a wing in disarray. 12 aircraft lost in August and September alone, with pilots being sent in predictable patterns that made them easy targets. Maintenance was compromised by McNamara's statistics-obsessed Rapid Roger program, demanding higher sortie rates with fewer aircraft. I'll be flying as your wingman for a couple of weeks, he told the pilots at his first meeting. You are going to teach me, but you'd better teach me good and fast because soon I'm going to be better than all of you. Olds immediately began fixing broken systems, instituting post-mission debriefings where he'd openly admit his own mistakes first, creating an environment where everyone could learn. He ended fraudulent practices like counter-sniveling, pilots falsely claiming missions into North Vietnam when they'd actually bombed in Laos. His greatest innovation came in response to increasing MiG activity. Working with intelligence officer J.B. Stone, Olds developed Operation Bolo, a plan to lure MiGs into combat by having F-4s mimic F-105 strike packages using their call signs, routes, and timing patterns. On January 2, 1967, the trap was sprung. MiGs began popping out of clouds everywhere, and in the swirling battle that followed, Olds' Wolfpack downed 7 MiG-21s, a devastating blow to North Vietnam's small fleet. Olds personally scored 4 MiG kills in Vietnam, deliberately avoiding a fifth when he learned headquarters planned to exploit his potential ace status by sending him home for parades and promotion. Tell them to go screw themselves. I just won't get number 5, he told a personnel officer. From that point forward, he let his wingmen take shots instead, even when facing easy kills. His most daring mission came on March 30, 1967, when he led a low-level strike against the blast furnaces at Thai Nguyen Steel Mill. Flying through mountains in thick mist, skimming treetops at 540 knots, his aircraft took multiple hits, including one through the main wing spar that left a basketball-sized hole. Despite his wingmen calling Plymouth lead, "You're on fire," Olds pressed on, dropping his bombs directly on the furnaces before limping home with fuel streaming from his wing. During his Vietnam tour, Olds grew his now famous handlebar mustache as a silent but visible protest against headquarters' restrictive policies and micromanagement of combat operations. The mustache, which violated regulations limiting facial hair to a small, trim appearance, became much more than mere facial hair. It evolved into a powerful symbol of defiance and independence that resonated throughout the entire 8th Tactical Fighter Wing. His men began growing their own mustaches in solidarity, and the unit became known as Robin's Bastards, with the mustache serving as their unofficial emblem of warrior spirit. When Olds finally returned to America in September 1967, General John P. McConnell, the Air Force Chief of Staff, immediately ordered him to shave off the rebellious facial hair before meeting President Johnson. This order symbolized the ongoing tension between combat leadership and Pentagon bureaucracy that had frustrated Olds throughout his career. In the Oval Office meeting, Olds demonstrated his characteristic directness, laying out a comprehensive strategy for winning the war. Mine Haiphong Harbor to cut off naval supply routes, destroy the critical supply lines from China, and launch decisive strikes against Hanoi's military infrastructure. Rather than dismissing these bold proposals, President Johnson showed genuine interest, engaging Olds in detailed discussion and arranging follow-up meetings with his national security advisors, including Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara. Olds' return revealed an America dramatically different from the one he'd left. Anti-war demonstrations had become commonplace, and the public's support for the conflict had eroded significantly. At a press conference in Washington, when reporters pressed him about ending the war, Olds' thunderous response, "Win it," captured headlines nationwide and became a rallying cry for Hawks while further antagonizing the anti-war movement. His personal life was also unraveling. His marriage to Ella, strained by years of separation and the intensity of his combat focus, effectively collapsed during this period, though they wouldn't formally divorce until 1976. The end of this relationship deeply affected Olds, who threw himself into his new role as Commandant of Cadets at the Air Force Academy. At the Academy, Olds implemented significant reforms, tightening disciplinary standards and revamping the honor system to emphasize character development over mere rule compliance. He instituted regular fireside chats in his home, where cadets could speak freely with him about their concerns and aspirations. These informal sessions, where he shared combat stories and leadership lessons, became legendary among the cadets, though they sometimes raised eyebrows among more traditional administrators. Increasingly frustrated by being grounded from flying operations and disillusioned with the military's political handling of the Vietnam War, Olds made the difficult decision to retire on June 1, 1973, exactly 30 years after his graduation from West Point. As he drove west toward his new life in Steamboat Springs, Colorado, the sight of the Rocky Mountains rising before him confirmed his choice. "I had finally come home," he would later write, "the home I would never leave." This move marked not just a geographical relocation, but a spiritual homecoming for a warrior who had finally found his peace. Retirement didn't diminish Olds' status as a fighter pilot. He remained active with the Red River Valley Fighter Pilots Association, River Rats, gave hundreds of speeches worldwide, and occasionally flew modern fighters through arrangements made by pilot buddies until we couldn't get away with it anymore. His F-4 Phantom, SCAT 27, found a permanent home at the Air Force Museum. He was inducted into both the Collegiate Football Hall of Fame and National Aviation Hall of Fame, and even befriended former enemies like Luftwaffe ace Gunther Rall at fighter pilot gatherings. Throughout his career, Olds maintained that fear and courage were widely misunderstood. "Real fear is something that grows and festers," he wrote. "It starts with a bad scare, but doesn't fade. Instead, it builds day by day, creeping into the soul, eating away at determination, eroding confidence and self-respect." He came to respect pilots like his roommate Raleigh Wallace, who, despite crying in his sleep and calling his wife's name, never refused to fly or faltered during missions. "Going on missions was easy for me. I looked forward to them. What Wally did took far greater courage." In his final days battling congestive heart failure in spring 2007, Olds dreamed of flying, always the same dream that improved each time. After diving through white fog, he would land on a deserted ramp and follow sounds to an old hangar. Inside, he would find all his departed comrades: Phil, Chappie, Tex, Hub, Leon, Tui, Pappy, Jim, Steven. "Old's flight, checking in," he would announce. At the piano sat his father. "Hello, Robbie. Welcome home," his father would say. "Hello, Dad. I was a fighter pilot," Robin would reply proudly. "Yes, son, you still are," his father would assure him. Through 34 years of retirement, Olds gave hundreds of speeches, carved wood, skied powder, and watched his granddaughter grow up. "It's been one hell of a ride," he concluded, a fitting epitaph for a man who embodied the fighter pilot ethos in every aspect of his remarkable life. Robin Olds' life embodied a philosophy that transcended mere flying skill. He believed fighter pilots were defined by attitude, cockiness, aggressiveness, self-confidence, with streaks of rebelliousness and fierce competitiveness. These traits manifested in his famous handlebar mustache, a deliberate violation of regulations that became a symbol of his maverick leadership style. Yet these qualities were tempered by discipline, teamwork, and an unwavering dedication to mission success. "The bond between pilot and machine transcends mere operation," he explained. "You strap the machine to your butt and become one with it. Hydraulic fluid becomes your blood, titanium your bones, instruments extensions of your senses." This intimate connection with aircraft was evident in how he could detect the slightest changes in engine pitch or airframe vibration, often identifying mechanical issues before they appeared on instruments. His leadership philosophy, learned from his father and commanders like Hub Zemke, centered on three core principles: knowing your mission inside and out, connecting personally with your people down to the youngest airman, and always being the first to take responsibility when things went wrong. He regularly flew with new pilots, shared meals in the enlisted mess, and knew the names of his mechanics' children. He despised leaders who created fear in subordinates, recognizing how Strategic Air Command's culture had produced chronic liars protecting their careers, promoting weaker subordinates they could dominate. Throughout his career, Olds waged a constant battle against bureaucracy that valued statistics over combat effectiveness. He challenged rules that made no tactical sense, such as the requirement for fighters to fly predictable patterns that made them vulnerable to enemy fire. He pushed for innovations like improved pilot training programs and tactical formations that would save lives. His frustration with Washington's handling of Vietnam stemmed not from hawkishness, but from the conviction that half measures only prolonged suffering on both sides. He advocated for either full commitment to winning or immediate withdrawal. In his final address to his beloved Wolfpack, he captured the essence of his philosophy. Be soldiers, be warriors, be men. You're learning about yourself. It's teamwork that does it. It's friendship that cements it together. It is dedication that accomplishes the mission. These words were delivered not from behind a podium, but standing among his men, his flight suit still damp with sweat from his final combat mission. For Robin Olds, being a fighter pilot wasn't just what you did, it was who you were at your core. His legacy lives on in the generations of military aviators who still study his tactics, leadership style, and indomitable spirit. The Robin Olds Leadership Award is still presented annually to Air Force leaders who embody his principles of courage, tactical excellence, and dedication to their people. His influence extends beyond tactics to encompass a complete warrior ethos that balances aggression with wisdom, individual excellence with teamwork, and mission focus with genuine care for those under command.